Scotch Potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Kristen Dreyer Kramer, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
This week we've got Torture in the Theaters. Zero Dark Thirty is out, wide release. We've also got Gangsta Squad, or Gangnam Squad, as I like to refer to it. There's also Haunted, a Haunted House. Not just any Haunted House, but, well, any a Haunted
House. It's just one.
It's a spoof. And then we have some DVDs and Blu-rays, and we're going to talk about a couple, you know, news stories as well. But before we do that, let's talk about the box office. And were we correct? So we were kind of both sort of kind of correct, I guess you could say. I said Texas Chainsaw 3D was going to win at $30 million. It did not. It won at $22 million, so I was a bit off. And you said The Hobbit was going to win with $22 million. It came in third. So that was inaccurate.
Yeah, how about Django?
But yeah, Django came in at the second with 20, and The Hobbit had 18 million, which was relatively close to your 22.
Yeah, not bad.
I mean, it wasn't. The number was closer than mine was. But I hit the spot. What is that? Win, place, or show? I don't do horse racing.
There you go.
It was something. One of those things.
It was somewhere in there.
But yeah, so yeah, it was Texas Chainsaw did well, but not as well as like The Devil Inside last year.
Thank goodness.
But you know, I watched Texas Chainsaw, and part of it is just you can't. So many Texas Chainsaw sequels are so awful. I mean, and I like horror movies, and these are bad movies.
Yeah.
Even for horror movie fans, they're bad movies. And this one, while it was bad, it was hilariously so. At times.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, that's the best kind.
And they do things in there where I was with this with Gone last year with Amanda Seyfried.
Yes.
Where I'm like, there's such cliche moments that you're like, this can't be unintentional. they have to
know what's going on.
Yeah,
here.
They had to know they put. And there's a whole scene where they're like, the kids are trying to escape Leatherface in a van. Well, no, there's a scene where Alexandria Daddario, the star, she runs out of the house and she falls down the front steps.
Nice.
And then she's running in the back. And there's this, like, 18-inch tall, like, fence around a little graveyard. And she trips over the fence. And then here's Leatherface, this lumbering, troglodyte,
nice.
Wielding a chainsaw, wearing a mask of human flesh. So obviously his visibility's greatly impaired.
Well, yeah, probably.
He comes down the steps, over the fence, not a problem. And then they get in a van and they start driving away. And
was there a dog in the van?
No, there wasn't.
Were there Scooby snacks?
There should have been. Mm. I'll tell you. But they driving away. Like, I mean, and they're speeding away because they're on a large piece of property to get to the gate.
Yeah.
And of course, Leatherface is there, blah, 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 stumbling along with waving his chainsaw, and he's catching up to him, which is ridiculous. And then they like try to run through the gate. And they crash. I mean, so it's just, nice. It's such a ludicrous escape scene. And that
January.
Won me over. It won me over. And it was in 3D.
Well, you can't go wrong with 3D.
Yeah.
Really.
And Alexia Daddario, I don't know if you notice this because you're a woman.
I am. Actually.
I notice this because I'm a dude. She has an enormous chest. And her
probably helped with casting.
She had buttons. She had like a button down shirt that was like cut off so you could see the mirror. But like, every scene, like, one less button was there until it finally was, like, completely unbuttoned, but somehow never flopped away from her breasts.
That's convenient.
Yeah. That was a little disappointing.
Two-sided tape.
It's, I think, what it was. Yeah.
Because usually when I get dressed in the morning, I put on my two-sided tape just in case.
When you're flopping around.
Well,
with,
you never know.
I do that, too. Little peek behind the curtain. So anyways, the only other big thing to note on that is The Hobbit is now over $800 million. So it'll break a billion. Easy. So you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr and Kristen Dreyer Kramer. And if you want to email us, you can email us at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave us a voicemail at 740-205-6456. Visit us online at fatguysatthemovies.com. Or you can get us on Facebook, facebook.com/FGATM. You can get me on Twitter at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
And you can find me at KDK Reviews or online at realdiscovery.org or nightsandweekends.com.
There you go.
Yes.
I wanted to hit this really quickly, this news story. The Oscar nom. You've heard of the Oscars, haven't you?
You know, I have.
Okay.
I have, yeah.
They have this, a little guy.
Some little party that they have later in the year.
What I don't get with the Oscars is they have a guy it looks like he's holding a shovel. Why would some guy holding a shovel represent the best? Usually you're shoveling something else. We'll talk about the Razzies later. Anyway. Yeah. What are your thoughts? Just very general. We're not going to rattle through these because, you know, hey, we figure you've heard this already.
Yes. You know, Oscar nomination day is a day of mixed emotions.
Yes.
You know, it's all exciting. And you're like, ooh, who's gonna get nominated? And you look at your list and you're like, oh, yeah, that totally deserves it. And then you're like, oh, hold on.
Yeah.
Who's not on this list?
Yeah. Insert so, snub here.
Yeah.
What did you think? Were you happy with the nomination? Was there anything that bothered you?
In general, I'm okay with it. I think every year there are a bunch of surprises that you're like, oh, how'd that get on there? And I wanted to pick that. And,
but were there many surprises for you? I didn't see very many surprises.
I'm looking at my list right now. And I guess as we were talking about earlier today, Moonrise Kingdom was one that I think could have made the list.
Should have.
And that's one. Yeah, it should have. Because there are a couple of things on here that I wouldn't put on there, but that's just me.
Yeah.
But Moonrise Kingdom is one that has been getting a lot of attention lately. Yeah. It's, you know, kind of one of those dark horses that came from behind. And
it won the COFCO Awards.
It won the COFCO Awards. And how many other awards in the COFCO Awards did it win?
It won, like, everything.
Besides Best Picture. It won everything. And, you know, while I'm not saying that it's necessarily the best picture of the year, I think it deserves to be recognized for, you know, it was a good movie.
Yeah. I think the thing that surprised me was the appearance of both Beasts of the Southern Wild in as many spots as it got. I'm not surprised that it got nominated, but like directing. It got nominated for directing, which kind of came.
Over
that was
Ben Affleck.
Big. Yeah.
Which...
Knock, knock. Who's there? Argo. You know the rest, Ben.
Yes, you do.
Ben, you know the rest so well. But also Silver Linings Playbook, which is ramped up a bit. I'm personally rooting against that because...
I know you are because you didn't like it.
I didn't like it, and I also don't want the Weinsteins to win. Because they always come in like at the end, and then Harvey's like, this is the best picture of the world! I'm waving my arms like I always do.
Yes, you are. Mm-hmm.
And people are like, yes, 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 The King's Speech, the greatest movie ever. Bleep. Oh, yes, 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 yes. The Artist.
You know,
no one will watch it.
I like Silver Linings Playbook, but I don't think it deserves to win.
But like Jackie Weaver for Best Supporting... Although she did... I think she was better than Robert De Niro in the movie.
Yeah, the nominations there are kind of baffling.
Yeah. I think
that just goes to show that it was a rough year.
Yeah.
You know, who else would you nominate?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe I would have nominated, like, Judi Dench for Skyfall myself. But
sure.
Oh, well. But, like, also, Beasts of the Southern Wild, what's interesting is with, I'm going to try and pronounce it, and I'm going to butcher it, so I apologize.
Go for it.
Quinzahanzi Wallace, something like that.
Something like that.
Something like that. I
we'll
have
probably
to
learn by February.
When the nominations came through, I'm like, oh, now I have to learn how to pronounce this girl's name. She's 9 years old.
We can give her a nickname. Can we just give her a nickname?
Let's call her Quinny.
Quinny
Wallace.
Quinny like Wallace. Quinny Wallace.
Yeah, Quinny Wallace. Yeah. We are coining that right now because we are the most influential voices in film.
Of course.
But Quinny Wallace got Beasts of the Southern Wild, and she is 9 years old, the youngest person ever to be, well, a woman, I guess, for nominated for Best Actress.
Mm-hmm.
And usually you see those either kids or old people getting nominated for supporting.
Yes.
But her and then Emmanuel Riva for Amour got nominated for Best Actress, and she's the oldest.
Well,
ever.
There you go. That's
so,
quite a year.
Yeah. I mean, I'd love to see Quinny get it, but I don't think she's going to get it.
She was really good.
She was good.
I will give her that much.
But
the
aside
movie,
from that.
Yeah, it was okay.
Yeah.
But.
Aside from that, it was kind of a dull year in terms of nominations.
It was kind of a dull year in terms of film in general.
That's
really
true.
When it comes down to it, not an exciting year.
They should have just like thrown in something like, oh gosh, I don't know, you know, like 1,000 words as like the other best picture, just to get people talking and be like, what? Anyways, we got about 30 seconds. Let's talk really quick. We're not even gonna review this movie because they didn't show it to us. A Haunted House, Just in Time for Nothing, here comes a spoof of Paranormal Activity movies.
We're investigating paranormal activity at the Johnson residence in suburban Los Angeles.
Yeah! I kicked you in your ghost balls! I got something for you!
Hi, I'm Chip. You must be Malcolm.
Yeah, that's pretty good. How'd you know?
Psychic. I have a lot of powers all over my body.
How far are you gonna go to get this demon out?
I'll do anything.
What is this supposed to do?
This just got weird.
It's a spoof. It's done by the Wayans.
And there you have it.
There you go. It's gonna be better than Aaron Seltzer and Brian and Jason Friedberg and Seltzer.
Oh, let's hope so.
But otherwise, it gets a preemptive suck because we didn't get a chance to see it in ahead of time. But when we come back, Zero Dark 30 and Gangster Squad.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Crispin Dreyer Kramer and Kevin Carr. We just got done talking about a little thing called the Oscars.
Yes, and a haunted house.
And a little movie called The Haunted House.
We talked way more about the Oscars.
It's true.
In fact, that's probably going to be the last time you hear a haunted house and Oscars said in the same sentence ever.
Yes. You never know. Stranger things have happened. Norbit got nominated for an Oscar. So
oh, my word.
It could happen.
Oh, my wordy goodness.
Anyways, so up next.
Let's talk about Zero Dark Thirty. Or as I like to say, Zero Dark Thirty. Catherine Bigelow directs this film about the decade-long hunt for Osama bin Laden.
Can I be honest with you? I am bad news. I'm not your friend. I'm not going to help you. I'm going to break you.
You really believe this story? Osama bin Laden?
Yeah. What part convinced you?
Her confidence.
If you're right, the whole world's gonna want in on this.
You'll never find him.
Just for everybody, you know, this is opening wide this week.
Yes, it came out. Came out a month ago.
It was like
mid-December.
Yeah, 15th or 22nd or something.
Because it's
like
been
that.
A long time since we saw it.
Well, we saw it because we got to see it early for award consideration.
Mm-hmm.
But they released it in New York and L.A. like right around Christmas-ish.
Right, the week before, I think.
Yeah. And now it's going wide so everybody else in the country can see it finally. So what do you think? I want to hear what you have to say first.
This is a movie that...
This is a movie, that is
yes.
correct.
It's a timely film.
Yes.
And that makes it interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The story is interesting, but I think for me, the thing that keeps getting me caught up in this movie is the missed opportunity that Catherine Bigelow has.
Okay.
As a female director directing action movies, there is so much that she could do with this movie.
Yeah.
She could take this action movie and tell it from a female perspective. Give it a little bit of heart.
It has the veneer of that because it's got Jessica Chastain.
Well, yeah, there's a female lead character. And that was, I walked in thinking, okay, this is going to be the Hurt Locker, except better because there's going to be some kind of life to it and some kind of heart to it.
Yeah.
And it lacks that. Now, I think of this movie as kind of the modern day counterpart to Lincoln.
Okay.
You know, you have all of the political posturing and all of the, you know, the nitpicking details and all these little things that you try to, you know, trying to hunt this guy down and follow all the leads. But it's just not as interesting to me as Lincoln.
Where you're right in that. I mean, it is that it gets into that minutia of the actual story. The difference between this and Lincoln is I understand how American politics works, and I understand how congressional politics works. So seeing all the meandering and finagling in Lincoln, it made sense because I'm like, oh, he needs to do this to get this, and he needs these people to vote because of this. And even though I didn't know who was who, I could follow it. Think of Lincoln if everybody's name was unpronounceable to big, dumb Americans like me, and everything else looked the same. It would just – it's all like – Middle Eastern desert, and then a bunch of names with a lot of vowels.
And it's long.
Yeah.
And it is dragged out as long as you can possibly drag it out.
And this is not a criticism of the movie necessarily. It's just a revelation for myself of how much I don't know about Middle Eastern politics and names and pronunciations and culture and that sort of thing. And so I think it's a little bit of a hard sell to the mainstream.
And there are some things that are interesting about the process.
Yeah.
You know, and it's one of the things that everybody's talking about now, the torture scenes and blah, blah, blah. But the manipulation of that is actually kind of interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it's a neat look at sort of how things allegedly are done.
Right.
But you're right about the female. Jessica Chastain plays a dude with breasts. It's really all she does.
It's true. And there are some things that she says in this movie that I don't know a single female who would ever say them.
And she sounds ridiculous. She tries to throw down a Sam Jackson line at one point. And
in the middle of a meeting in like the CIA building.
It's one of the most ridiculous lines of the entire
movie. It is the most memorable line in the movie for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah. And there is another woman in it, and she is like the dumbest creature on the planet.
Yeah.
And they really play, and they play it off way too cliche in it. But I mean, for that, it's still a neat movie to see.
It is. It is.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not like trashing it.
You know, there are so many critics who are out there just raving about this movie, how it is just the best movie.
Yeah.
And I walked out and said, eh.
The best part of it is the ending, of course. What, you know, spoiler alert, they do go after Osama bin Laden.
It's true.
And part of it is, you know, that's what it's leading to.
Right.
Because that's the tagline of the movie, pretty much. So there's this whole thing where, like, no one believes her and they don't have enough evidence and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And you're like, idiot, no, it's of course. Well, they didn't know that at the
right.
time. And so it does kind of play that a little bit too much. But when they do the raid, it's a very realistic raid. And as I understand, and we'll hit on this in a minute, it is very, supposedly very accurate to what mm-hmm. actually happened, like beat by beat and shot by shot. And they didn't Michael Bay it up. You know, you didn't have like bikini girls running around and giant robots crashing in and stuff like that.
It's true. There aren't any giant robots.
Yeah. Or even stuff like people, I've heard people compare it to Black Hawk Down, and I'm like, Black Hawk Down was an action movie. This is not really an action movie. Mm-hmm. It's not traditionally an action movie.
No.
And it's different than Catherine. I mean, this is a girl who, this is a woman who directed Strange Days mm-hmm. and like Near Dark and K-19, The Widowmaker. This is in Point Break. She directed Point Break, didn't
she? Yes, she did.
This is, she's known for action mm-hmm. and she's really scaled her action back.
And so. I miss that. I miss the action.
She takes herself a little too seriously.
Yeah, because there are parts in this movie that I'm like, okay, we get what you're doing here.
Yeah.
Just trim it down a little bit. We're all falling asleep.
Yeah. So what's your final grade, Fat Guy's grade?
I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
Yeah, I'm on a kind of rocks type thing. It's worth checking out, especially if it's long.
It is. Know? And like I said, it's a timely movie, and it's interesting to see what went into the whole process.
Yeah. You're listening to Fat Guys in the Movies with Kevin Carr and Chris Andrea Kramer. And speaking of what went into the process of Zero Dark Thirty, I don't know, a lot of people have heard this, and you probably heard this on the radio and news stories. There are some people who were kind of upset and actually called for a Senate panel was going to examine the contacts mm-hmm. that they did making this. This was a story. It's all been all over the place when I'm looking it off of a Reuters feed. I mean, this broke a couple weeks ago.
Yep.
But basically that the Senate Intelligence Committee is like, how do you guys know all this? And this is interesting because it does question, you know, where if there were any leaks or any inappropriate information shared.
Mm-hmm.
What I find funny is the fact that they're examining it means they got something right that they shouldn't have.
Right. Hold on.
Yeah.
And everybody's talking about, oh, you know, we don't really torture like that. And everybody's like, how did you find out about that?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. They're like, this is outrageous. We don't do that.
We don't waterboard anymore.
We don't waterboard. And you have to sit there and be like, so wait, the you're going to listen to, I mean, I love the military and God bless the troops, but the military's not going to always tell you the truth. The government's not going to always tell you the truth, people. We know how this works.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess that's a question. Do you think is it a pro-torture movie?
I don't think so. I think that's just
Do you think it's an anti-torture movie?
Process.
Yeah.
No, I think it's just telling the story.
Yeah.
You know, I think people tend to take movies as more political than they are sometimes. I think Catherine Bigelow was just telling a story.
Yeah. And I think with it, when it comes to the torture thing, because I've heard some people say, well, it showed that torture failed. I'm like, no, they got information.
Oh, yeah.
It works.
It works.
There is a certain sort of stance where people want to believe that torture is unreliable. Mm-hmm. I mean, torture is reliable at times. It's not going to be 100% infallible, and you got to sift through the data as you do with any sort of intelligence mm-hmm. gathering. That's the way the world is. Torture can work sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, as unpleasant as it is. You know, I have to sit through movies like 1,000 Words.
That is torture.
All right. We got to go to a break. And we're going to talk next about Gangsta Squad.
Yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies with Chris and Daria Kramer and Kevin Carr. Did you have something else you wanted to say about Zero Dark Thirty?
Well, I think we were having an interesting discussion during the break.
Yeah.
About how your desire to be waterboarded.
Well, my point is, the way this came from is like a lot of people, and I had said this in the last segment, that I think there are people that just want to believe that torture doesn't work. And so mm-hmm. they make movies and television shows and they're like, torture never works. It's so unreliable. Well, torture works. But the thing is, there's a huge difference between waterboarding, I would imagine, because I have not had either of these done, waterboarding and getting your fingernails pulled out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there is a difference I'm curious to be waterborne. I can imagine how painful the fingernail thing is. You don't need to.
Yeah.
You don't need to arrange that for me.
No.
But if you can find some people to waterboard me, give me warning though. Don't just like have them show up in my house.
Kidnap you from your home.
There you go.
Well, that just adds to it. I mean, that's part of the whole process.
Yeah.
You get pulled out of your home and you get a, you know, thing put over your head.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's the terrifying part of it, too.
Well, and it's like I compared this movie to Act of Valor, which came out early in 2012. That one was a little bit propaganda-y.
Yes.
And there's scenes in there where, like, we will never do this. And well, you know, you go in and everybody's an enemy who's got a gun.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you have to do it as the military. And you will shoot people in front of their loved ones if you have to because – and without question, because that's the way the operation works. And it's unpleasant to see on screen, but that's how the operation works.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those things that I think people are just blowing this a little too out of proportion.
Yeah.
It's a movie. You know, yes, they had inside sources and things like that. But, yeah, who's to say that they did it exactly as they heard?
Yeah.
Who knows what kind of methods they used out there and how it went into it? It's a movie.
Yeah.
You know, it's based on true events, yes, but it's still a movie. Oh, it's still a movie.
It's a movie. Anyway, so let's talk about another movie.
Let's do that.
Yes. And what's that coming up?
Gangster Squad.
Gangnam Squad.
Josh Brolin stars as the LAPD detective tasked with bringing down notorious mob boss Mickey Cohen, played by Sean Penn.
We're losing Los Angeles to an eastern crook.
I'm the future.
This isn't a crime wave. It's enemy occupation. I need you to wage war against Mickey Cohen.
I'm looking to put a squad together.
What's that?
A small squad. Five, maybe six guys.
Going up against 40?
Well, you gotta die of something.
Okay, now it's your turn. What did you think of this one?
You know, here's the thing. I felt this movie should have been made in the 90s.
Okay.
To me, it looked like a 90s movie. It looked like something like Dick Tracy you know, the Phantom, you know, or even like The Rocketeer. It had that sort of 90s production design of the 40s.
Yeah, I can see that.
It just, it felt like that. It just felt out of its element. And it had a cheese factor that really felt more appropriate in the 90s.
There's definitely a cheese factor to this movie.
And it does, and there are times where it really doesn't know whether it's trying to be this hardcore gangster flick like The Untouchables.
Okay, yeah.
Or if they're trying to do this more whimsical thing, because they mow somebody down.
Each, yes.
They mow somebody down with a machine gun, and then like the next scene they're like, oh, he like jokes about this thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's corny.
It is a little bit. But to me, that kind of feels just like the genre.
Yeah.
You know, like it's what it's supposed to be. And you have Sean Penn in there who is so ridiculously over the top. And he's just entertaining to watch because he's so ridiculous.
I wish he would have done the entire movie as Harvey Milk. I think that would have been awesome. Don't you?
I can see that.
Because Harvey Milk's like the only performance that of Sean Penn that I've actually liked. I'm like, oh, it seems like a nice guy.
Yeah, Sean Penn.
Every other performance he is, you just like, I just want to kick him in the, you know, nards. He's so annoying.
It's true. I kind of have that feeling, too, with Sean Penn.
Yeah. And he has that sort of Dick Tracy kind of prosthetics on his face.
He's very plasticky and kind of wonky looking. Yeah.
It's weird because it feels like I heard, and I've never seen this movie, but I heard somebody compare it to the movie Mobsters with Christian Slater.
Okay.
Back in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And it just feels like that. It doesn't feel like it's a really solid gangster. And what is up with Ryan Gosling's soft-spoken voice in this movie? He's talking like this through the whole movie.
He's a character.
Yeah. He does not take his shirt off, ladies. You don't really see him.
No.
You don't see his pectorals.
To me, though, this is kind of, it kind of feels like a classic Western.
Okay. It has a cowboy.
Well, yeah, it has the same kind of pacing to it, mm-hmm. to me. And the same kind of characters. You know, the bad guys are bad guys. And, you know, the good guys, well, they're kind of bad guys, too.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of what makes it fun.
Yeah.
You know, it's an entertaining movie. Is it a great movie? No.
It'd be better watching if you're drunk.
Fun. And honestly, in January, it doesn't get a whole lot better than this.
Texas Chainsaw.
Mm,
Texas Chainsaw.
Okay.
You have not seen it.
That's
you cannot
true.
Speak from experience.
I can't.
Yeah, I can't say I hated. I sat next to Nick Harum.
Oh, Nick.
Our friend Nick from Movies Hate You 2 and On the Marquee with Kristen Dyer Kramer. Mm-hmm. And he hated the movie. I mean, he was writhing and squiggling.
He hated
it
from the beginning.
But it was R-rated.
Before he walked in.
It's R-rated, though. They do a lot of... that's the thing. I think the thing that made it odd is that it has these very R-rated scenes. Mm-hmm. And then it had scenes that just completely feel like they're PG-13. That the whole movie was shot for PG-13. And I don't know. It don't think too much about it. There's a mild entertainment value to this.
Oh, yeah.
But it's not a good movie.
I was entertained by it.
What's your
and
final
I will
grade?
Give that. I will give it a kind of rocks.
I'm going to say it kind of sucks. Because Ryan Gosling didn't go shirtless. That's why.
It's true.
Shame on him. What's up, Gosling? Although I do wish at a certain point that they would have revealed that Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone were playing the grandparents of the characters they play in Crazy Stupid Love.
There you go.
And then
I'll
would
take
put,
that.
That would take a whole new meaning to Crazy Stupid Love. If you've seen it, you know you can figure this family tree out. Anyways, you're listening to the Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carnkers and Dorian Kramer. What do you think is going to win the weekend, box office-wise?
You know, this is a tough one.
Yeah?
But Zero Dark Thirty has already been out in New York and L.A.
Okay.
And I think those are kind of big audiences for this movie.
Okay.
So I'm going to give it to Gangster Squad.
Oh! Gangnam Squad.
Yes.
How much?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be high. I'll just give it a 20.
20?
Yep, I'll give it 20.
All right, I am going to say Zero Dark Thirty with Zero Dark 30 million.
Okay.
That's what I think. I'm going with the 30 million again. I think it's good. And here's why. Because everywhere that Zero Dark Thirty has opened, it has broken records in terms of audiences. Mm-hmm. That's why I think it's going to
And
do
it was
well.
Tough. I went back and forth with that one this week.
It could. I just think Gangster Squad doesn't have... Part of it is... the sort of the ugly history behind Gangster Squad is that was the trailer, if you recall, last summer.
Yes.
During the... When the shootings in the Aurora during The Dark Knight... There's a scene in the movie that has been since replaced where they shoot people in a movie theater.
Which was actually kind of a cool scene.
It looked cool in the trailer, not so cool after recent events.
Exactly.
So they pulled it from release, reshot it, and they moved it to January. And I heard some people wondering whether, you know, Gangster Squad was something they were going to give an awards push to, although it opened in September. It was going to open in September, which was...
There was talk of it. Sean Penn's in it. So if Sean Penn's in a movie, of course, there's going to be talk of awards.
But I don't think they hurt any of their Oscar chances by not having it.
No, I don't think so.
September.
No.
So I'm curious as to what scene that was and how it would have fit into
I was
the
trying
movie.
To figure that out while we were watching it. Yeah. I was trying to figure it out. Yep.
Yeah, so it is sort of that unfortunate blemish on this movie, but I don't think that is going to have any impact on the film. But yeah, it does feel like it tries to be The Untouchables at times. Mm-hmm. They even have a staircase scene.
There you go.
Anything else on Zero Dark Thirty or Gangnam Squad that you want to talk about?
There is no dancing in Gangster Squad. Unfortunately.
Oh, yeah. They should have had, they should have broken out. There's one more thing I want to mention. We'll put a link on the webpage if you want to go to it. Wired had an interesting story. This is also about Zero Dark Thirty, about how real Navy SEALs would handle famous movie missions.
Yeah.
And they had stuff like, The Return of the Jedi and
it's
The Dark Knight Rises. It's a good, and it basically analyzes pretty much everyone is, we would drop in by helicopters and kill everybody.
Yes.
So that's all the enemies, and then they zip tie everybody else. So that's how they did. But they actually analyzed. I thought the most interesting one was they analyzed The Dark Knight because they said they go in under the water and somehow track down the bomb.
I'm trying to think of which one there was. Where they're trapped in the mall.
Yeah.
They're like, we're Navy SEALs. We would already have an escape plan figured out.
Exactly. All right, we got to go to a break. We can come back to DVDs.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr and Kristen Dreyer Kramer.
Yay. That's my yay.
It is kind of sad, really, when you...
And there was much rejoicing.
Yes. So we had a few movies that we talked about this week.
Yes.
Zero Dark Thirty.
Yes.
Gangster Squad.
Gangnam Squad.
Yes. And A Haunted House.
Whoop, whoop, whoop.
But now, It is time for something really special.
What's coming up next?
It is time for the DVD Roundup.
Yee-haw! Get along, little doggies.
Okay, so what do we have up this week?
Well, actually, there's some interesting stuff out there. There's a couple 3Ds out there. Yeah. You've got Frankenweenie and Dread.
Yes.
Did you see Dread?
I didn't, no.
It's violent.
That's what I hear.
It's extremely violent.
I heard it was entertainingly violent.
It's fun. It's a neat movie. But yeah, it's extremely violent. And that's, I think, it like made like $10 million total in the box office. And I think that's why. I just think it was very gruesomely violent in scenes that, that I think it just turned off the mainstream audience. Mm-hmm. It was so gritty.
Speaking of surprisingly violent movies in 3D this week.
Yes.
Frankenweenie. Yes. I just watched that with my husband, mm-hmm. who hadn't seen it in the theaters.
Was he horrified? Did he run out of the room screaming?
He was a little bit.
Really?
There were a lot of times when he looked at me and was like, what? And I'm like, oh no, it gets worse.
What's funny about it is, did you know the history behind the original short of Frankenweenie?
Yes.
Where Tim Burton made it and then Disney was like, this is terrifying. Kids aren't going to like
this. And they fired him for it.
Yep. And then
they made this, which is so much more violent than the original. So much more.
Well, yeah, and you go back and watch the original Frankenweenie short.
And it's like, nothing.
It's pretty mild. It's not a whole lot's happening in it. And this one is, it's not, this movie would never have been made 20 years ago.
No.
But after like having Tim Burton's style out there so much, mm-hmm. people are used to it. It's not as.
Yeah, this is a terrifying movie for kids.
I thought it was funny. It's cute. But you know what? I mean, maybe for little kids, because it is black and white and dark. But I mean, I've got my kids watch a lot of crazy stuff.
It's true, they do.
They liked it and they enjoyed it. And there are no nightmares.
No?
No.
I don't think your kids have nightmares.
They don't have nightmares.
Your kids probably have nightmares of the fluffier variety. Like, there's a kitty.
My son, Nick, has a little toy he calls Kitty Cat. And mm-hmm. he comes out once, he goes, he dreamed somebody took Kitty Cat from him.
Oh.
That is the equivalent of my kids' nightmares.
Yes.
And then I took his kitty cat. I'm like, give me that.
You're such a great dad.
And I ate it. There's also, speaking of movies that really aren't scary, House at the End of the Street.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see that?
No.
No, it's what I find fascinating about this movie is Jennifer Gardner decided, not Jennifer Gardner.
How about
what
Jennifer
am I
Lawrence?
Saying? Jennifer Lawrence
Perhaps.
Decided to balance out her award-nominated performance in Silver Linings Playbook.
And why not?
And her mega blockbuster performance in The Hunger Games with The House at the End of the Street. It reminds me of Silent House that came out early last year,
mm-hmm.
where Elizabeth Olsen, it was a low-budget horror movie that had no
right.
business being theatrically released, but when she got award nominations,
that's
suddenly
what happens.
It was. Yeah. This one, it's about a woman and her daughter who move next door to who they think might be a psychotic
right.
guy. And it's not terrible. It's not awful. It's just this big amount of meh. It's a PG-13 horror movie that's going to scare 13-year-old girls.
There you go.
And apparently your husband.
Probably.
And then there's Compliance.
Compliance. Now, this is one movie that I was going to watch, but after I heard so much about it from you and some of my other critic friends, I've avoided it like the plague.
Yes. It's a movie about a prank call that gets really, really criminally offensive. Yeah. And here's the thing. If you go back and read the original account of it,
mm-hmm.
it's you still look at it and be like, how could you fall for that? But it escalates in such a way, if you read the account,
mm-hmm.
they take longer for it to escalate in the actual movie. And you're like, at some point, somebody would have been like, yeah, this isn't right.
Hmm.
They drag it out a little bit too much. And by adding more to it to pad out the, because they need
a
longer time, it becomes ridiculous. And you almost sit there and be like, I have no sympathy for you because you're that dumb.
Now, this is one of those movies that we were talking about earlier with the Oscar nominations.
She didn't, yeah.
And this was one that everybody was talking about, that she had a lot of buzz behind this performance. And there was no Oscar nomination for her.
Well, part of it also was a bit of a news story because Anne Dowd had to put her own money into award campaigning for her.
That's what they say.
But then again, I mean, it's a minor movie released by a minor company.
Right.
It's Magnolia. And Magnolia is great. They have some great movies.
Oh, yeah.
But they pretty much put their entire lineup out for consideration, and they don't have money to – whereas, like, the Weinsteins will pick two or three movies mm-hmm. and go behind those.
Oh, yeah, for Magnolia this year. How many screeners did we get?
Oh, we just, like, 25, something like that. Yeah. Which is great because I love
that. Oh, yeah.
I love having the opportunity to see
these. I always look forward to that package yeah. because but, there's so many great movies in there that I really want to see.
Yeah, but they cast a wide net, and they get a lot of independent awards. So mm-hmm. Ann Dowd got the Central Ohio Film Critics Association mm-hmm. vote. You're listening to Fat Guys in the Movies with Kevin Conn, Christian Dreyer, Kramer. Let's just finish these up. Samsara is out. Is Samsara? I think I'm pronouncing that right. It's a documentary.
Yes.
It's actually made my top 10 movies of the year. It's by the people who did Is It Baraka?
Okay.
It's not about Barack Obama. But it's a non-narrative documentary where it's just a lot of pictures and it's a very cultural rich thing and it looks beautiful. Right. So it's worth checking out.
That one's still on my list, yep.
Especially on Blu-ray. There's also Guns, Girls, and Gambling, which is not very good. It stars Christian Slater.
Okay.
There you go. And then TV, you've got Archer Season 3 and Smash Season 1. Those are both out on DVD and Blu-ray.
There's also a new Blu-ray release of The Jazz Singer this week.
Ooh.
Which comes with a 3-disc set and a massive book.
Wow.
It's like an 88-page book.
Did you get that?
I did. I just got it, though.
Oh, wow.
So
that's nice.
I look forward to checking that out.
We'll get that review in March when she's done going through everything. Stinker of the Week for me was Hit and Run. Did you like Hit and Run or did you even see Hit and
Run? I missed that one.
It was awful.
Yes. That's what I've heard.
It is not the movie that Bradley Cooper is nominated for an Oscar for. It's Dax Shepard, and he's an idiot, and the movie's as dumb and as awful as he is. Don't go see it.
There you go.
Anyways, we're going to, before we wrap things up, let's hit on something else. This is related to video. And we had talked about this a couple weeks ago.
You called it.
I did. We were talking about how Disney was just dropping all of their Blu-rays mm-hmm. for their animated films, like all at once. Like within a month, they like dropped half their vault.
There were a lot of them, yeah.
And I said, well, I think they're going to be trying to push to the next format. Whatever mm-hmm. that is, and I think we're here. The other thing they've done is they've released a lot of these on Netflix Instant, which is interesting, okay. too. The Wreck-It Ralph Blu-ray is coming out on March 5th.
Mm-hmm.
The Blu-ray DVD combo pack, 3D, all that kind of stuff. But they're doing a digital in-home release, which is fancy Disney term for on-demand,
right?
On February 12th. So they're going to be pushing at-home stuff. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm still a little skeptical on this one.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm still too old school that I like having my disc in hand.
Yeah. What's funny is I've talked with Merrill Barr, who does podcasting with me on Fat mm-hmm. Guys in the Movies as well. And he, of course, is like, whoa, physical media is dead. And it's, you know, all download, and people get external hard drives. Here's the thing. Especially Disney's special because when it's kids' movies and it's stuff that you're going to have for kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people want that physical product. The other thing is, part of the problem with the younger generation, and of which Meryl is, they're sort of that, they forget that things disappear.
Yes.
And Disney might just decide to discontinue the downloadability of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And they're famous for putting stuff back
in
the
vault. Oh, yeah.
And,
they do.
And restricting it. So when you have that physical media, when you have that videotape of Lady and the Tramp before it came out on Blu-ray,
mm-hmm.
it was nice to have.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the only way you could watch it. So I think it'll be interesting to see if this catches on with Disney because I think parents who want to buy it, they want to have the physical copy.
Yeah. And for me, you know, I'm all about the digital stuff and I've downloaded my ultraviolet copies, which I've never watched.
Yeah.
You know, I have them on my phone, but why would I want to watch a movie on a phone?
Yeah.
You know?
Unless you're on like a plane.
Right. And I've got, which is great, but when I watch something at home, I don't want to try to figure out how I'm going to connect my laptop and get everything figured out and get all the wires connected. I just want a disc that I can pop in the player and go.
And it also makes a difference between whether you want to own it or whether you want to rent it.
Mm-hmm.
I think on demand is quickly becoming the go-to market for rentals.
Yeah, that's great.
People want to purchase a video. They don't want to spend $15-$20 to download something on their own external hard mm-hmm. drive. I think people still want to physically own something if they own it. And then, like I said, you take all the connection issues and the back end and, mm-hmm. and if say, not Disney's going to go out of business, but if they just discontinue that,
right.
you can't download it again.
Mm-hmm.
It's there. You know, you have it forever as long as that physical media works and can play in a player.
Does that make us sound old?
We
that
are
we like grew up during the Depression or something like that.
We grew up during, yeah, exactly.
We still collect bags of bags.
Anyways, we got to go for this week. We had Gangster Squad. You said it kind of rocks. I said it kind of sucked. Haunted House, preemptive suck. Zero Dark Thirty gets kind of rocks from both of us. I said Zero Dark Thirty will make Zero Dark 30 million, and you said Gangster Squad will make 20 million this weekend. We'll see. Next week, Broken City, The Last Stand, and Mama.